The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, before you get into the show, which I know you're super excited to hear because every fucking show of Thinking Outside the Long Box is amazing, we want to thank our Patreon supporters, Chad, Ryan, Derek, Doyle, Devin, Taylor, Jason, Steve, and now Christine. Thank you so much for being a part of this show by donating to us on Patreon. If you too would like to support this show and keep it going every other week after every other week, then you can go to patreon.com/TOTLB, where you can get your choice of all sorts of cool bonus videos and awesome prizes like hats and t-shirts, original sketches. I don't know if you guys follow Tim Husky's artwork on Instagram, but one of those original sketches got colored and it was fucking amazing. So join us today at patreon.com/TOTLB. And to those of you who are already subscribed, thank you so much. We appreciate you more than our own assholes.
On this very special episode of Thinking Outside the Long Box, the guys catch up on a shitload of Marvel shows with Gabe, Juan, Tim, and Doyle.
Fuckers made these sandwiches wrong.
It's like some of my favorite shit when it comes to listening to these episodes. Yeah. Like the stuff that doesn't get cut right before Juan rolls on the track.
For real, that is just a lingering rancid.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 96 of Thinking Outside the Long Box. We are going to focus today on something that we should have been focusing on episode to episode because every once in a while we're shitty
Gabe's
slackers.
An idiot.
You know, I'm not an idiot. I'm just very, very busy. But because we haven't focused on it, we're going to talk about basically all the Marvel shows that we can possibly think of that we've watched. But anyway, I'm Gabe.
I'm Tim.
I'm Doyle.
I'm Juan.
My man, fool. Me to the shitty man.
I'm fucking tired.
Okay, so how far back do we want to go? Like, I feel like we've covered Daredevil season 1 and 2, Luke Cage season 1, Jessica Jones season 1 pretty extensively, like, when they came out. But I don't think we have talked much about anything from Punisher forward.
I don't think so. I don't even think we talked that much about Daredevil season 2. I think we just did a little bit of that one.
We haven't spoken about him much because you don't ever watch him.
Well, I try.
Let's just do a brief recap then.
Okay, so like Daredevil season 1, he's blind, he beats shit up.
Great.
There you go. Luke Cage.
Iron Giant.
Different show.
Vin Diesel's best acting role.
Luke Cage
season
off.
1, amazing.
He's black, sure, he's strong, he beats people up. Yeah. All right.
Wow. Jessica Jones season 1.
She's white, she's skinny, she still beats people up. Moving on.
Iron Fist.
Well, he's
white, he's whiny. He doesn't really beat a whole lot of stuff up. And then Defenders.
He fists a lot of objects. It's like a door.
A lot of objects.
Building.
He uses the Iron Fist on more like other things than people.
Sword. Breaks some handcuffs.
And then he sleeps for a long time.
He does sleep for a long time.
Oh, I'm so tired.
Defender season 1. All too four short. Of them get together and beat people up.
Too short.
It is too short.
It is too short.
Okay, so my quibble. I think we talked about this when we talked about it on the show. I would prefer that introductory, like, four episodes where they're like, let's bring the team together was more like two episodes and leave the rest of the season to, like, the actual team up.
Yes, agreed.
That would have made a better season, but
it was short, but it was also overly long for what they did.
They spend way too much time on, you know, they're all in different places coming together. Like,
yeah, that could have been like
that could have been an
one.
Episode one, maybe two episodes, and then actually tell the story of the Defenders.
Especially because the area that they're defending is like six blocks. It's like, well, where are you
shorter
from?
Season, like
we're right over there.
Episode season instead of a 13 episode season.
Yes. Well, and if you watch the trailer, you're led to assume that when Daredevil becomes Jessica Jones' like lawyer in that scene, that's it. Game on. But no, there's like another four episodes after that one before the whole team is actually doing
shit. I think
shit.
My exactly. biggest gripe with the Marvel shows, which I still like them all, but my biggest gripe is that they overly get into everything. Like, they spend a little bit of time developing everything too much.
See, I really opinion. Like that in a lot of ways. So we're caught up now to the Punisher. Yes. Punisher gets introduced in season two of Daredevil. Tim and I were talking about this a little bit last night, how John Barenthal is like the perfect casting for the Punisher.
Yes.
Yes.
He has one thing that he does as the Punisher that I don't like, but it's minute. He's still very good.
What is it?
He has this thing when he gets fucked up, like after he gets shot or beat up or fucked up, where he just sits and just like chicken neck heads like around. Like, you got to watch it again, where he's just like staring at shit that doesn't exist. It's like a PTSD in his while he's alone moment. Which maybe that
has PTSD.
So that
could be. It's super awkward looking, but it's super minute because he's definitely the best Punisher I can think of.
The thing that I've noticed so far in the second or like the first season of Punisher and the second season of Jessica Jones, which is the stuff that I fully got all the way through,
yeah,
is that the Punisher is about PTSD. Everybody in the show, like every main character in the show, has PTSD for some reason. Like, something has happened to them that's traumatic.
And none of them think they have PTSD.
And none of them yeah. think they have it, but yeah. they all react to situations.
Especially
and like
the kid that digs a hole in the backyard.
Or
he's totally fine.
Or the lady from Daredevil that Paige, that Karen Paige, how she has the gun and she's like super like shell-shocked. And
I think
like,
she kind of figures that out about herself, though.
I agree with that, but, yeah. like, every character has some form of PTSD. Like, the senator or whatever that guy is that flips on his stance on gun control as soon as somebody runs into a room and tries to kill him, like, you know,
as
or has
would.
Yeah, yeah. as or he or the, you know, discussion about security that, you know, they have with him two or three times in the season, yeah. like... It's super, super interesting that's what the show is about. Like, it's about gun control and it's about, like, PTSD, like, the whole season is, in, like, a really not heavy-handed way, which is something Marvel isn't always good at, like, telling a subtle, like, important story. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're like, hey, here's the hammer of justice.
See, it's weird because I think that it is heavy-handed in one facet, but then the rest of it's not.
Yeah.
Like you said, there's the fact that they all have it's not something that you'd gather unless you're paying attention, I guess. But it is obviously about the, for a while at least, the kid who obviously has PTSD.
Lewis, yeah. Right? Yeah.
The white kid who's just freaking out.
Amazingly played by the same dude that plays Lee Harvey Oswald in 11/22/63. Like, that guy is...
Which, I think he was playing like a guy who had PTSD there, too.
Lee Harvey Oswald?
Yeah. Well, also, didn't he play a character on one episode of, like...
Oh, shit.
A cop show where he had PTSD and was an ex-soldier?
Oh, I have no idea.
Luther, I think?
I could be wrong. That's the only thing I've seen him. It's very possible.
I could be wrong, but I think there's an episode of Luther where he plays a kid who has PTSD. And, like, this might just be this kid's only thing that he's good at.
Dude, what a weird typecasting to happen to you. Yeah. Like, hey, I'm really good at playing soldiers with fucked up, like, brains.
It is crazy to watch that season and go... And be like, what does this have anything to do with anything until you kind of get towards the end of the season? Because you don't really, it doesn't really tell this. I mean, it's a slower tell of why that soldier has anything to do with the Punisher. You know what I mean? Aside from their soldiers and their, he knows his friend, you know what I mean? But that's, it's a very loose telling until you get to closer to the end of the season, which is pretty cool.
Blows himself up in an ice freezer.
Yeah,
dude, like moment one
yeah.
of him on camera, I was like, oh, he's gonna do something awful, like either to himself or a bunch of people. And then when he digs the hole in his backyard, I was like, yeah, this yep. is going yeah. south super fucking fast.
He almost shoots his dad.
Yeah.
Did he straight up like stab the shit out of like the faker?
Yeah.
In the one scene? Yeah.
Dude, he like...
The so, big dude.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, yeah. The big dude's like, buddy, fuck, relax. I didn't know you were this crazy.
I'm only sort of crazy. You're like crazy. So the violence in this show...
Oh, yeah.
Out of control.
So good.
Especially the final fight.
the final two fights, the one between him and Agent Orange and then him and his friend. So I haven't looked up his friend's name to see if he's like a character that comes back as a villain.
He is, but I don't remember what he is.
I also cannot remember his name, but he is that
wrapping that's on his face at the end. That's what the character looks like in the books too, but I'm just not super versed in Punisher to know who it is.
Like it just it escaped me, and like right now John Steele's like, God damn it, God damn it. Like,
cause I'm Googling it, acting like I knew.
Wow.
I'm drunk. It's sad inside.
I like how mad that just made Doyle. I'm Googling it.
Tim, tell me his fucking name.
I just like how he's always correcting us a few weeks later.
Jigsaw.
Jigsaw. There you go.
Which is how that happens. He couldn't do it because he's not here.
I don't know.
When he drags his face across that mirror, that is the most fucked up. I was like, oh, that looks like it hurt.
When he's fighting Agent Orange and he just like straight pushes his thumbs into his head, I'm like,
So are we to assume that the only reason a Marvel rated R movie doesn't work or they think it wouldn't work, you know, aside from Deadpool, is because of the language? Because that's like you said, it's a pretty violent show. Like, I mean, there's the only thing that would push it past the whatever. I don't even know if those shows are rated, to be honest.
They're rated MA.
Are they?
TVMA.
So, I mean, I don't. Why wouldn't you? I mean,
not as much in Punisher, but.
They don't show the nudity, but. That's one thing
that's weird is they show sex, but they show sex in the same way that, like, CSI would show sex. Like, there's not, maybe the scenes are a little longer and linger a little longer because they're like that prestige level, like hour long show. Yeah. But like, you could put that on TV with no problem.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The language and the violence, like Daredevil couldn't be on regular TV. It's too violent.
They would be rated R if they were in theaters.
For sure. Like,
so it's weird that they take the stance against rated R movies. But they put it on their TV. Like, it's weird to me.
So I feel like they want to take their more... What did you just... Is that a ghost? What was that? Juan's just reaching out into the sky. He's having a stroke.
Don't worry about it.
Sorry. It just really was distracting. My bad. I feel like when they do, like, mature things... They don't want to do it in a way that, like, implies titillation. Like, obviously with the exception of Deadpool, because that's the whole point. It's meant to be, like, funny and gross and, like, totally over the top. But when they want to tell, like, a super, super serious story that they know needs to be, like, a rated R level thing, they want to tell it over time so it's not just... Here's the Punisher fucking shit up for an hour and a half. Because
that way it's not like boom, violence, boom, fucking boom, blood.
Violence. Yeah. Because the culmination of the last two fights mean absolutely nothing without the previous like 8 hours of television. Like if it's just him, his family dies, he goes on like a killing spree of like low level mobsters and works his way up to the top. That's every Punisher movie that's come out already, and they're not that good.
So I don't mean specifically like why the Punisher isn't a rated R movie. I'm just saying in general, it's weird that Marvel takes the stance against some rated R movies that they could do in the future. It's not specifically Punisher, but while they're doing these kinds of shows to a broader audience, I would say
right, and that's what I'm saying. They want to tell the story, like, fully so that the violence or sex or whatever has, like, an actual, like, basis. Like, it's not just boom, violence, boom, sex, because you can't tell a full story
in an hour and a half. I know what you're saying. What I'm saying is that it's weird. It's weird that they wouldn't – not Avengers because it's weird that would be rated R. Like, why can't – an Iron Man be rated R. You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying. Not why I understand why they're taking 10 or 13 hours.
You just make more money when it's not.
It's just weird to me, right?
That's why I think they take that rated R risk with characters that are lesser known. That's why everybody was excited that maybe it would happen with like Black Widow, because that would be amazing. Rated R Black Widow. You would have to make
boobies?
Well, you would have to make a Black Widow movie rated R because her backstory is just fucked up.
I mean, it's Red Sparrow. It's the movie Red Sparrow, yes. Basically. So, but I mean, I genuinely think a big part of it is they don't want to take that risk unless they can tell like a real story mm-hmm. around it and give like those punctuations of like violence and sex like a reason to be, because otherwise they're just regular ass action movies.
Yeah, they want it to make sense.
They want it to make sense, like. Because it's hard. It, like you said, it's hard. You can do it in like an hour and a half. You can do it in 2 hours. John Wick's a perfect example.
He doesn't even kill his family. He just kills his dog.
That's enough to piss me off.
And he loses his shit.
Kills his dog, steals his car, totally murders everybody.
Totally rational experience.
Put the Punisher in front of it, be the best Punisher.
You haven't seen John Wick yet? Oh, you have got to watch that movie.
It is unbelievable. I'll leave him there if you want to watch him.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
It might be the best action movie of all time. It's really up there for me.
Wow,
it,
yeah. That's some high praise.
That's a bold statement.
I love Predator.
I gotta say I agree.
Just like, I mean, obviously there are genres, but I'm talking like a shooter, like a badass guy who walks around being badass action movie. I can't think of a better movie.
I don't know. Old Boy's up there.
It's a lot slower than John Wick.
I was going to say, that's a very methodical movie.
But Old Boy is fucking amazing. Just the scene.
I think I've explained this before. The premise of John Wick is so bad that I once took a bunch of really pretentious asshole friends who hate every movie.
Gabe?
To it on my birthday. No.
No. I like just lots of movies.
Just because I thought it would be funny to watch them go like, this is why it sucked. And everybody came out of it going like, that's fucking brilliant.
The movie was like,
they tricked me.
The movie was directed by like Hollywood's stunt guys, right?
Yeah.
Like, wasn't that the whole?
I think so.
I don't know.
They were like, we just want to put all the cool shit that we do for a living in one film.
I just remember
twice.
It's very good. You should watch it. That's what I was saying.
So Luke Cage, or no, not Luke Cage. Punisher season one.
Amazing.
Thumbs up.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, about just phase one Netflix, thumbs up generally.
I would agree with
of
that.
Of all the phase one shows,
except for the Iron Fist.
How many were in phase one? Daredevil 1, and then all the other ones. So Daredevil there was 4, then two. Daredevil 2, and then Defenders. So there was 6?
I would say Punisher's part of it too.
D1, D2, Jessica, Iron Fist, and Luke Cage,
Defenders.
Yeah. And then Defenders, yeah, so that's what...
I mean, it's weird, though. You would think Punisher should be a part of that because it's that first season, but you're probably right because it came out after...
I think his setup was to go do his own thing. I don't really think he has much to do with
the rest
the
of
other
it.
Of them. Yeah.
I put hard money that he's in Luke Cage season 3 a bunch.
I bet his season 2 has a lot more to do with their shared universe. Because right now, the story of avenging the death of his families is done.
Right.
You know, like they've told that origin story and now he's got to have something else to do. And that strikes me as a very Defenderese thing.
He's going to be like the Rorschach to their like group.
Yeah. Where he like shows up and is like, you got to put more effort into putting down X criminal.
Right.
Like,
so if there's
Luke Cage, like, we don't kill people. And he's like, we fucking kill everyone.
If there's 6, then they missed on 1.5.
Yeah.
Daredevil. I mean, Iron Fist and Defenders.
Which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I give it a solid thumbs up.
I mean, honestly, even those are watchable shows in comparison to a lot of terrible TV.
This is true. Accurate. There is a lot of awful TV.
I mean, I carried the tentpole for Iron Fist, and I still do.
I'd watch it again.
I liked it.
It's not an action show.
It doesn't fit in. It doesn't fit in with what they were doing. It's a weird offset.
It's just weirdly. It's weirdly paced. But like when we talked about it on the show,
it's the worst era, in my opinion.
Like when we talked about it on the show, like it was me. I talked about how each one is a different neighborhood. Like it's Harlem, it's Hell's Kitchen, it's Manhattan. You know, and he's that part of that like rich. Like side of New York that they just hadn't touched on yet, and I think they just went too heavy into like the lawyer like law and order bullshit, and it just got bogged down in that and missed kind of its mark.
You have like 3 or 4 episodes of them just proving that he's Danny Rand.
Yeah.
So we got about 7 minutes or so.
We want to pause and
sure.
Yeah.
You want to take a break?
Yeah, let's pause and
we'll come back to the later half.
Chewing ice like a madman at the beginning of this show. Just in case people are wondering what that noise is. What? I've been chewing ice this whole time. Oh, I'm just letting people know in case they're wondering what the fuck that noise is.
Oh, yay. Crunch. I'm so excited.
Juan gets to edit that.
I'm so excited that you're barely awake.
I am barely awake. I had to go out and get my wife from a bachelorette party this morning. It was nice. It was suck.
It's hot. Never mind. I'll tell you later. All right. We'll be back.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
We'll get you back to your podcasty goodness now in a minute.
First, we'd like to take a second to tell you about our marginally better podcast, the 365 Flix Podcast.
I am the Scottish Whedon whore, Chris.
And I am the pissy ex-video store clerk, Kev.
And we bring you the latest movie and TV news, reviews, and rants.
All that and a bunch of top fives that you really will not care about.
Subscribe to us on iTunes, Libsyn, and all other third-party podcasting apps.
And on top of all that, you'll get free access to our indie talk. You'll hear us speaking with directors, producers, actors, comic book creators and artists about their experiences.
Don't forget to drop us 5 stars and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters.
Told him not to go in the water.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Mario Candelaria, writer of comics such as Ashes and Epilogue, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
What did I do stupid this time?
I don't even know if you did anything. You were just like, I got one final question, and I was like, how do you find the clitoris?
Oh, man. Now I wish I would have asked that question. That's an amazing question.
Side note.
She would have been very upset with me, though.
We're recording
again. Oh, okay.
Only because we have 30 minutes or so to finish this first episode. Yeah, we gotta go quick.
Are you serious?
No.
Oh.
I mean, I can be. It depends on how long you want the next episode to be.
All right. Because we got to be done. Well, yeah. Anyways, so let's move on. So we were on Jessica Jones season 2.
Were we?
Yeah.
Okay.
What came after Punisher?
Jessica Jones season 2.
Is that what came after
Punisher? It went Jessica Cage Jones, went. Then Luke Cage, then...
I think technically it went... No, you're right.
No, whatever. He's yeah. right. You're right. Right.
Defenders you're right. before Punisher.
You're right. Point.
You're right, motherfucker. You're right.
You're right.
You're right. Fucking Tim's got all the energy now. He's been over there napping.
I know, right?
Which I feel pretty good now.
Napping and farting.
Is that farting in my sleep?
He's a little stinky over there.
That's fine. I'll probably farting in my sleep a few times.
Toil?
Napping and farting. Shit. Those
McDoubles I had last night for dinner.
Yeah. Ooh. Man, I had those glazed chicken strips. Mistakes were made.
Wait, what?
Glazed chicken
strips? Yeah, they have like these barbecue glazed chicken strips at McDonald's.
Oh, for some really? Reason I thought you meant like a glazed donut. Like, oh, took no, a chicken strip, glazed the bitch.
It's like that meme it's like that meme I posted of the lady dunking her chicken strip in fucking Coke.
So
for
the
some
only
reason.
Thing I could think of is maybe the chicken strip was too hot.
Or too salty.
I feel like those chicken strips were definitely a cure for constipation.
She's trying to get the salt off, but then she was like, now my Diet Pepsi's all salty. I can't win.
So much semen.
What if it was like the Mentos thing?
Jesus.
What are you... What?
I'm not letting him repeat that.
Something about cum. There's a lot of cum in that joke.
And Jessica Jones?
That was a weird segue.
Very little cum in that joke. I didn't see any.
She has a lot of sex in her
There's
shows.
A bathroom scene that's a little graphic.
You're a freak. Yeah. Get out of me. Like, so, okay. So,
well, you are a freak. Yeah.
So, this
you
is...
believe how many times I've heard that.
And that was just last night.
I had a weird technical sex question.
That was at his place.
No. Right?
Oh, fuck.
Oh, okay. Let's back up. Let's back up before I ask my technical sex question.
So I was like, the only person you remember me fucking a game last night. No,
we go into 7-Eleven on the way home from McDonald's last night, right? And the 7-Eleven guy, just like this totally clearly methed out dude, goes, got any fun plans for tonight? I was like, yeah, we're going to go home, watch the Big Lebowski, drink some booze, get super high. And, you know, yeah. Whatever. He's all, oh, it sounds like a lot of fun. And I look at Tim and I go, and then I'm going to molest you later. And the dude's face was like, what the fuck is going on right now? It was amazing.
Should I call the cops?
I think that fat dude's going to rape that skinny dude.
Why don't rape them.
Oh, man. So, Jessica Jones, let's talk about it. I have a very...
specific set of skills?
Specific sex question about Jessica Jones. So, in the first season of Jessica Jones, like, the best sex she could have was with Luke Cage.
Right.
Because they're both superpowered and they can't hurt each other when they're having sex, right? So... does she just have better control of her superpower? Like, how does she not crush
it's like the
guys
Superman
on accident?
Thing, you know?
Like, it's just, it's a weird thought. Like, shouldn't she, I mean, shouldn't she only be able to have sex with superpowered people without hurting them?
There's like some back alley superhero book that exists in Marvel and DC where they're just like, how do you fuck normal people without killing them? Yeah, like insights from Spider-Man and shit in there.
I mean, does she even enjoy sex with regular non-humans?
Doesn't seem like it.
No, I mean, it seems like it. She's going to... I imagine that her vagina is also very strong.
That's,
I mean,
that's what I was thinking.
Where is the super clitoris?
It's even more sneaky than the regular clitoris.
I don't find it that sneaky. I don't know what you guys' problem is.
I think we might have an episode title there.
Where is the superhero clitoris?
Yeah. For it for years. It's like a goddamn expedition in the Alps.
I don't know what kind of women you're with, but
hey, we all women need love, Gabe.
I know,
even Alpy women. All right, even Alpy men.
Yeah, well, I am a very Alpy man.
So much hair down there.
She can't use a regular.
She's brushing door. Around.
Part like, dirty. Off.
She's like smacking her vagina with a sledgehammer.
Wow.
She's like, I feel nothing.
I don't want to say it's nothing, but that's probably somewhere on the internet.
Yeah, this is true. So seriously, getting away from the stupid...
I said it. It's a thing now.
Getting away from the stupid 13-year-old boy sex jokes, what did you guys think of the show itself?
So I saw this a long time ago, I think, before anybody else did. I had commented at that time that I thought season 2 should have been season 1. And season 1 should have been season 2 because you get way more backstory in season 2 about what happened to her mom, obviously. You know, you get it. That seemed way more season 1 than it did season 2 to me.
So
I think not knowing that her mom was alive impacted the character that she was in season 1, though. So that would have been a little weird. But I didn't actually like season 2 until her mom was brought on the show. Hmm. I just felt like the characters were doing illogical things, like, left and right. Like, it just made no sense to me. It's like, Jessica Jones doesn't like dealing with people and hates people, and this guy comes in and basically offers her the sweetest job ever, doing exactly what she's doing, and gets and he'll deal with the people side of things. She's like, nah.
But she's the boss, I think, is what the problem was. I don't think she wants to be told what to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, every decision felt like that to me. Like, the friend going to the dude who used to molest her, making the guy who's barely stable, ex-drug addict, film it in the closet. It's just nothing made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. It is basically a comedy of bad life choices.
Yeah.
Like, the whole season is.
But I thought whoever played her mom did a phenomenal job. That's when the show picked up for me.
So I do love, like, I love the character development across the board. Like, it definitely builds all the secondary characters.
Hey, turn your fucking phone off.
And Jessica Jones.
Or down, at least.
Yeah.
Tick, tick, tick.
Like, we're all farting around on our phones. Just no one can hear it except for yours.
Oh, man, I just woke up.
For the fourth
silent.
Time this
Tim's
morning.
Into a Bluetooth speaker.
So, I like the plot line with her mom, but the actress that plays her mom, her angry face, I cannot take seriously. Like, she, when she's angry, when she goes into, like, her rage state, the face that she puts on, I'm like, she's not really angry. She's pretending to be angry. Like, it was the weirdest disconnect with the actress that I've... It's just something that hardly ever happens to me when I'm watching, like, shows or movies, that it was, like, really disconcerting where she gets super mad. I was like, that's her pretending to be upset. Like, oh, shit, she's an act. Oh, damn it.
So I kind of thought that her weirdness just all around, because she's awkward.
She is very awkward.
Was because she was not out. very much. You know what I mean? She doesn't have a lot of interaction with anybody. And so I just kind of figured that that kind of boiled that kind of into makes all sense. Of that.
Yeah. Test subject.
So. Yeah.
And also, her face is not her face. Like, correct. You know, maybe she's just not used to making her face make facial expressions.
They took her face off.
Yeah.
And Johnny, Luke Cage, well, no.
Johnny Cage?
Johnny Cage.
I've mentioned all Raiden. The Cages besides Nicholas.
Get in the there. Cage and John Travolta?
Yeah. That would have been sweet if Jessica Jones just somehow veered into Face Off. Took her face off.
I need your face.
Oh, man. So, like,
show me where the clitoris is.
Oh, man. Like, overall, I actually really like this season. And I like the order that the seasons are in because there's so much about her character that doesn't make sense if you don't know the Purple Man story. And there's so much about the second season that doesn't, like, connect, like, why she's so intent on the search if you don't know the story that happened before it. Like, I understand, I don't know, exactly what
to
you're
me,
saying.
To me, it felt
but
way more like
really
an origin
good.
Story.
It is. It is the origin yeah. story.
Which this is a
it's
weird
place. Just told
place.
A little bit reverse. The right. only thing I didn't like about the first season of Jessica Jones is that they blew probably the most powerful bad guy on of any of the series
and it's,
in the first season of, it, like, the least powerful character show. And
it's weird because David Tennant is a guy who you can carry through, you know, yeah. different seasons, and everybody fucking loves David Tennant,
Kilgrave,
no matter what he
Kilgrave
does.
Should have been a character I felt like the Defenders led up to, because it's like that is a massively massive powerful power. Character, and it was just like she's the weakest of them all, just in based on like of background
skills too
and background, like yeah. She doesn't have this long history that the other characters do, and it's like here's just this badass, ridiculous bad guy, and then the Defenders are like fight. I've gone out for like crappy ninjas. Like, I still get it.
I agree with you that there should have been one staple through all of them that led to them fighting.
And he would have made sense. He could have been behind the scenes manipulating yeah. everything.
What did you guys think of all the David Mack art?
Amazing.
It's like
it's
really
it was
cool.
awesome because I saw it later than I normally do. Like I normally fucking as soon as it comes out I'll binge all of them.
Right.
So I got to watch him post like, "Oh, did you watch this episode? My painting was in it." And you yeah. know what I mean? It was his fucking shit is beautiful. Right. It's really really good.
I just thought it was a cool nod to like one of the creators like on the comic mm-hmm. to say, "Hey, like, you've made all of this art that's, like, so distinctly Jessica Jones. Can you please put these paintings in our show?" Like,
I think he helped really cool, with a little bit of the show, too.
Yeah. It's just, it's in general, it's just, like, a really cool idea. Mm-hmm. And, like, the art is phenomenal. So, I mean, how could it not be? It's David Mack, right? Yeah.
I give it a thumbs middle.
Thumbs middle? I would
not
give
the art. The season.
I give this season a thumbs up. What do you guys think?
I'm a pretty thumbs middle on Jessica Jones in general.
Same.
So the first season for me of Jessica Jones was probably the best. Gabe's the best season for me.
Y'all wrong. It's amazing.
I loved the first season. It was too. My favorite out of four. The four with Luke Cage being right.
My
fucking
thumb
there.
Wants to be up, but it's just in between there, in the middle.
It's a thumb tweener.
Right on the taint.
Yeah.
Thumb's three quarter.
Yeah.
Thumb's chub.
Thumb's turgid.
I don't know. It was just real. That's the I don't know why, but I just it was fucking slow at the beginning to me for like the first half of the season.
But I think the first season was like that, and yeah. so I was kind of used
that's
to it
why
at
I
that
was,
point.
That's why I didn't much like love the first. And actually, like I said, I think all of the Marvel shows are doing that. Like to me, I think you would cut them all down in episode length, or just make them more action packed because they all feel like they built super.
I don't
slow.
Know. I feel like Daredevil has a lot of action in
and
it.
And I
well, Daredevil
like
season
that.
Two does. I think they did Daredevil, in my opinion, and I think they did Daredevil the most right. Because the first season has a ton of buildup, which makes sense. And you still get to see cool shit because he's like has this different perspective because
right.
he's blind.
He's
and
handicapped.
Then
handicapped.
The second season is just badass shit all the way through, which was awesome. And there's still a ton of story in the second season.
I agree.
Right.
With the Punisher and whatnot.
I can't like, wait for Vincent D'Onofrio to come back.
Yeah.
Oh, I cannot fucking wait.
When does, like, the season kick out? Like, when does Bushmaster, like, back kick him in the face in Luke Cage season two?
So
right away. It's pretty quick,
so
I think.
We, yeah.
No, it's not within the... It's, like, maybe the fourth episode or the third episode.
But that's, like, the first third.
No, he beats him up twice. He beats him up on the street where they record him, and then he beats his ass up on the bridge later.
But I'm talking about the one on the street. I don't think that's before the third episode.
I can't remember now.
Up until that point, he's literally like talking about football contracts and Nike contracts and going to parties.
Well, is that where we're up right now?
So yeah,
it's Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and then Luke Cage.
Two. Okay, yeah. Cool. So moving on to that. So I've only seen the first few episodes of Luke Cage season two. That's like all the further I got.
I hate this whole you so project. Much,
dude. I tried really hard. You didn't ask my wife. I was like, literally, like, I've got to watch Jessica Jones now. Like, I literally cannot watch other stuff. But I'm going to catch up on Luke Cage because it was my favorite of all the phase one of the Marvel Netflix series. Luke Cage was my favorite. And it just, so far, the episodes that I've seen have continued that. The music's amazing. The acting's amazing.
The music is always good in Luke Cage.
I'm not a giant fan of the villain so far. And, like, I don't think
Bushmaster?
Yeah. And I'm not, I don't
He's
think.
Not really the main. Well, you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Right, right.
It's okay.
That's why,
you can talk
that's
about
why I was asking.
Like, I can't think of a villain that's going to top Cottonmouth. Like, when he died, I think, much in the same way when they killed off Kilgrave, I think it was a mistake. When they killed off Cottonmouth, I think it was a mistake. Like, I mean...
Plus, that actor kicks ass.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, his acting was so good, and his counterpoint to...
They fucking elfed him.
Like, his counterpoint to Luke Cage as a character was just so spot on that it's hard to overcome that deficiency, I think.
I'll tell you that it's hard for me to... Really, I have to really pay attention to Bushmaster when he's talking. It's very hard for me to understand. Maybe.
I completely understand him.
It's hard. It's because they have the accent and they speak so fast. It's very hard for me. I have to really pay attention when he's talking.
You can turn on subtitles. That helps. Like, there are movies... There are movies that I've watched where somebody's accent is super, super thick, and I'll just turn on the subtitles. Like, I got no shame.
Yeah, Snatch. Don't be led astray.
Like, there's just definitely moments where it's like, oh, shit, I have no idea what that is saying. I should definitely turn on the subtitles.
Well, if we're going to talk about it, we should talk about it, even though he hasn't seen it.
It's okay. Just talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think? Either.
I think of the second wave, Luke Cage is still probably my What's one all in the second wave?
So far, just Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist.
Yep.
So,
okay.
Punisher, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist.
Okay, well, Punisher is my favorite show of the
second
wave.
And then I think Daredevil comes soon, and then Punisher comes pretty close to right after it.
Again. Punisher, even though, again, I thought started a tad slow, I still think is my second favorite season of the Marvel shows of all of them. But Luke Cage is probably third, the second season. It was good. And Bushmaster, I think, ends up being a good bad guy for what he is, and he exits the show at a point where he should, and then you get the main villain, which is what's her name?
I do not remember her name.
It's the sister, or is it the sister or the cousin
it's
of
the
Cottonmouth?
It's the cousin. So it's the girl's daughter. What the fuck is her name?
Well, she ends up being like the kind of the villain you didn't expect at
right.
the end. But her mom is kind of like the villain they're overcoming throughout the season.
She's the senator. Do you remember her name? I can't
remember
her name.
I don't remember her name.
But she's kind of the main villain throughout the whole season. For some reason, this underpowered fucking lady seems to just live through the whole fucking show. But her daughter ends up being the surprise kind of villain.
Okay.
The crazy thing for me
What's her name? I don't know enough about Luke Cage either. She's a real comic book villain, though, her daughter. But I don't know what her name is.
You know what? Almost all of the characters, you can find a comic equivalency in these TV shows, I've found.
Somebody Google it.
Don't worry. John Stillwell.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Come on, John
fucking
Still.
Idiots. They don't fucking know shit about comics.
Time
God
for you
damn
to
it.
Get fucked up and correct us, John Stillwell.
But for me, the more fascinating part about season two is Luke Cage's journey.
Yeah, how he ends kind of taking over the nightclub.
Because he almost becomes a villain himself.
They hint it like he could go that
way. Yeah, it's him battling.
I mean, we all know he's not going to.
It's him battling like he doesn't want to. Like, how do you deal with thugs and gangsters who don't have really a rule? You know, how do you deal with that? And it's with violence and what he's doing. And that's him at the end is he takes up the chair. He takes up the mantle with They took down the Biggie Smalls thing behind him anymore. But
he very much becomes the Papa Midnight character right. from the Constantine movie, where he's like, "I'm not going to be out there stopping everything. I'm just going to make sure everything's in check."
Right.
And now and I mean, run this bitch.
That's kind of how he is in the comic, where he's kind of a he's kind of a jerk. Like, I think they run Heroes for Hire out of a movie theater, if I remember right. But, like, he's kind of a jerk, like, and he just, I keep this in check, like, don't step out of line or Luke Cage shows up.
Right. You know? And that's the thing, like, he doesn't want to be out there checking everything, like, low crime and all that. He just doesn't want somebody bad to come in and take over, and that's, I think, why he kind of took up the mantle and stood up. But it definitely hints that he's going down a much darker path than any of the others.
He's like that in-between kind of hero like the Punisher is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the release schedules, but see, it says that the thing Daredevil comes out this year and Punisher comes out next right. year. So
the thing with Punisher is I know he's a good guy. In the sense that he does bad shit, but he's doing it for
he's an anti-hero.
He is
at best.
He is, but I'm saying, like, through the seasons, the only reason he's doing what he's doing is because of out of revenge. You know what I mean?
Because he's crazy.
It's well, and I'm sure he's crazy, but I mean, Luke Cage is more. It hints more that he's actually could become a villain.
Okay.
And not
that
just...
would be, if they took it that way, it'd be super interesting.
Right. I don't know that
where
they
Defender
will.
Defender season 2 is about Punisher replacing Luke Cage while they tried to defeat Luke Cage. I would watch the shit out of that.
It's just way more nuanced through his character through the season than with Punisher, when you know he's just going to be out there fucking killing people. Like, you right. know that's what the Punisher's doing. Luke
well,
Cage
Punisher has
balances
a hard line.
That.
It's like, Punisher will do what this no matter what.
Right,
and he
right.
won't do that. And that's very few things, but he won't do that.
But I that
he
I,
would do anything for love.
Yeah.
But you won't do that.
Punisher knows where the clitoris
you
is.
Think
it didn't seem like it in a TV show.
So real quick, have any of us watched Iron Fist?
I've watched three episodes.
Okay, so maybe we wait for the next episode to actually talk about it.
Fucking Iron Fist coming out like the day before we do this.
I know. Like, as soon as somebody else was like, oh man, Iron Fist comes out on Friday, I was like, fuck, we are supposed to be doing our Marvel show on Sunday.
Out last night.
Yeah.
You were like, oh, Iron Fist came out. I was like, really? Fuck, am I that out of the loop? Holy shit.
Yeah.
I will say that the four episodes that I've seen since season 1 came out, including the episode in Luke Cage, dramatically different from season 1.
Yeah.
It's supposedly, I didn't read the whole article, but the headline was, it's in its sophomore year, it's got the biggest bump in Rotten Tomatoes out of anything in existence at this
yeah,
point. So it's getting really good reviews.
What I don't get about Netflix, though, is I've watched every superhero everything to some extent on Netflix, right? New superhero show comes out, Netflix doesn't send me an update. Of gay shows, I've watched only Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Every gay thing that comes out on Netflix, it's like, Doyle, we got new shows for you.
It just knows you. It knows your market. It knows that you're part of that market.
It knows
Doyle.
You're sensitive.
I know. Just because I like the Queer Eye.
I think it's because you watched all of Queer Guy in like
I did.
One well, this night. Guy fucking watched it's it in 24 show. Hours.
24 hours?
He
watched
the
it
shit
in 10,
out of it.
10 hours.
Those gay guys get me.
Get you what?
Turgid.
Right, he's touching his dick.
In the heart. That's where it goes.
Oh, man.
You going to redesign my apartment first?
Wow.
I'll do whatever you want if you fix my apartment up. Oh man! So let's quickly touch on some of the other shows. Cloak and Dagger, I really dig. Like, it's a really cool show.
I still haven't seen it.
Again, started slow, but I liked it a lot.
I like it a lot. Yeah,
I'm actually not through with it, but it's very good.
I'm almost done. I think I have like two episodes of it left, or something like that.
How much more is it after he gets rid of the cop that killed his brother?
Not much more.
I think that's what I saw last.
Okay. I think it's like maybe like three more episodes after that.
I'm four episodes into Cloak and Dagger.
And are you liking it?
I like it. It's just super fucking confusing.
The first couple episodes, you don't know what's going on. Yeah,
I'm like, whose timeline am I in? Who am I talking to? What is going on? Like, it's so weird. Like,
their powers are strange too. I mean, it's like a weird
show. It is a very odd
I don't even know what the powers are, except for he can kind of teleport. Like,
oh, no, he can teleport.
Yeah.
No, I mean, like, but he doesn't know how to yet. He so just kind of learning. Appears.
So one of my friends, the first time she goes into him, like, disappears into him, yeah. One of my friends Facebook messaged me, and she's like, is she, like, I haven't watched anymore, but is she, like, dead? Like, what happened there? I was like, no, that's their ability. Like, she can go in him, and then he can teleport her to somewhere else, and, like.
That show takes a weird turn, too, because at first you're like, this is really weird. There's no real reason for these powers to exist. Like, it's really a normal show, and then there's, like, fucking zombies. I'm like, this show gets weird.
But the comic itself was like that. It was like, it's a 70s weird.
Does it explain comic. The power, with the power source?
Yes. Yeah. It explains everything.
I saw that the tanker explode and shit, but I didn't know, like, what the fuck came about.
It's kind of crazy. Like, it's definitely worth continuing watching.
Very bizarre.
It's good. So, the two that are probably the bigger ones that I haven't seen at all is Legion and
still can't.
Runaways.
Legion was also very confusing.
I haven't seen Legion besides the first few episodes where I was confused. Runaways, I just stopped watching for some reason, but it's I got seven episodes in.
Runaways was not, but the first season ends and you still don't know what the fuck's going on. And then they add this giant hole that is supposed to have something in it that you also don't know what it is.
I also think
super
I'm not
fucking weird.
I also think I'm not its market. Like, it's definitely like a teeny.
It does seem
it just wasn't
younger.
Done right. It's like it.
It could have been
at,
so
you
much
look at Stranger
more.
Things and you look at that, and like that's the comparison to me. Like, this is a little kids get put in a crazy situation, and it could be awesome. Stranger Things, it could be not awesome. Like Runaways,
right?
Like
I
forced myself to keep watching because I was like, oh, this is gonna get good at some point.
Like, I haven't seen any of Legion, but I only watched like 1.5 episodes of Runaways before I was like, eh.
I think I saw like 7 episodes. I just never got into
it. I watched the whole thing.
What else?
I watched
was
the whole
there?
Thing.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
So you watched that
is amazing.
You love
I
that
watch,
I'm fucking
I love
seasons behind
Agents
on
S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
What's crazy?
So here's the thing. It's slow.
Yeah.
In the first couple of few seasons, because it's trying to find where it fits, because it goes from being focused on one thing, and then all of a sudden it's a monster of the week kind of show, and then all of a sudden you jump back to focusing on the Inhumans, because there was going to be a movie, so there was a big push for Inhumans, and then
there was a movie. It just fucking sucks.
No, that was it was a TV show.
Oh.
It was going to be a theatrical movie. It was in the lineup to be a movie.
I thought Inhumans was a better show than Runaways, and that's saying a lot. I watched Inhumans. Inhumans, I could tell exactly why Inhumans did not work out. Like, I was not thrilled about it. But
it was terrible, that's why.
But every episode, at least, there's like a big fucking dog. It's kind of cool. Like, something happened where I was like, yeah, it's kind of cool. But
that
Runaways,
was,
I was like, there were 7 episodes where I was like, nothing cool is happening.
It was supposed to be a feature, though. The Inhumans was in the schedule to be a movie, and then they took it off. And so
because Humans used to be like phase 4, I think.
Yeah,
because it was
going
to be their version of the X-Men.
You were correct.
Stories.
Yeah. Yep. But so I think margins. I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. took a while to figure out what it was, but it's the one show. Aside from, I've heard Cloak and Dagger does this really well too. It's the one show that bleeds into everything else fucking beautifully.
Right.
It's brought on the Kree. It's brought on Asgardians. It's brought on a bunch of different features. They talk about what was going on with Hydra and Civil War.
It's the one show.
Like, it's the one show that does fucking the Marvel Universe justice. And since Ghost Rider came on, Gabriel Luna, fucking amazing. They have picked up that show from then forward. It's been awesome.
See, I want to watch it because I love Ghost Rider, but it's just like I got so long before I get to Ghost Rider that I don't know if I can get it.
What's weird about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is every time I sit down to watch it, I end up watching like 9 episodes of it. Like, I really, really like the show, but I'll like just stop watching it for a while, and then I'll be like, oh, I'll sit down and watch it for a little bit, and I watch like 9 or 10 episodes of it. Like, get through like a whole season. Then I'm like, oh man, I can't wait for the next one. I'm going to watch wrestling. And then I don't watch it again for like another year and a half.
I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you. So season three, I think, ends the Inhumans, I think, if I remember right. But I'm telling you, Ghost Rider to present, and then the next one is going to be the final season. It's supposedly. It's been fucking balls to the walls, and it's been really good. It's been really good.
You think the next season's going to have the snapping in it?
I don't know. That's the thing. So it should be happening now. This season should be happening now. But they pushed it off past Infinity War. And so I'm assuming that it's going to touch base on some of the things that happen. And you kind of, because they're one show that doesn't gloss over that shit. It's not just like, oh, hey, we're cool, back to normal.
You're in the same universe.
Right. So it's the one show that does that shit really good. So I assume that it will.
Executives are going to love the fact that, oh, we can kill half the cast for the show. Still make the show. We don't have to pay these money. Yeah, let's do that.
I don't want
to
say nothing, but they did that already.
we can kill off half of the half we already killed.
It's amazing.
We bring it down to just Phil Coulson.
I did not understand what they were doing with this character. That's probably one of the reasons I stopped watching the show.
I'm telling you, I think the first couple of seasons are really about them finding what the show is going to be. And then it really ramps up. How much money do you have to have
to be able to say, hey, we're going to take two seasons to figure out where we're going with this? Marvel just fucking shitting money.
So random question, because we only talked about Marvel shows. Do you think DC or Marvel's doing TV shows better?
Ooh, DC.
DC.
I think DC is for still sure. too. Even though all we do is talk about Marvel shows, the DC shows for I think sure. are better.
Well, I can't talk about shows because this idiot doesn't watch anything.
You can talk about literally whatever you want. I talk about shit that you've never even heard of all the fucking time.
The problem is we can't converse about it.
I can converse with you about literally anything.
No.
Hey, Tim, I'm going to talk to you about something you don't know anything about. The clitoris is at the top.
Here's how this conversation is going. Here's how this conversation would go. So far, he hasn't said anything.
Well, he hasn't said anything all day today.
I'm just saying, because he hasn't watched, because he hasn't done things, that's what I'm saying. You can have a conversation with me in the room, but that doesn't mean we're conversing. It just means you're talking.
Yeah, but that's all people care about.
All right. So let's do this. You in that corner. You get Lucille. You get.
But that's why.
Something that's actually heavy.
I literally watch everything. I'm caught up on all of the DC TV shows.
That's my problem, is I just don't have enough time to do all of
it. I haven't caught up on all the DC shows. Like Arrow and Supergirl, I'm not. DC Legends, I'm getting there.
Okay, Supergirl, I haven't. Everything else, I haven't.
Flash is fucking... I think Flash is the best comic book show on TV.
I agree with that.
I 100%
agree. I'm a season behind on that, but I love that show. It's unbelievably good. That's
a show that this season did fucking amazing because it did not have a speedster villain in it.
Yeah, it did amazing.
I'm like two or three seasons into all of these shows, but not caught up.
Yeah.
If you're only two or three seasons, you're about four seasons behind. Well,
I don't watch them live. I only have like Netflix and Hulu, so yeah. I'm always going to be wherever they're at. Minus one. So,
except for Black Lightning. Batgirl? DC, what the hell are you doing with Black Lightning?
Well, it's because it's not connected. I think they do really well because the other shows are all with each other.
Talk about shoving an agenda down your fucking throat. Black Lightning.
But when... So, sorry, ignore that shit. But
I thought you were going to delve into that more.
Ignore Doyle being a racist.
I'm not being a racist.
I agree that that's not racism.
I know. I'm just being a shithead. But I think that's what makes the Marvel... That was racist. But
this is why I can't post that video.
You can totally post that video.
This is why. You don't know about it because you're fucking affecting everything.
Whatever. You could totally post that video. He interacts with people that are 10 times worse than us literally all the time.
Nope.
Dude, I listen to Tell Him Steve Dave. They are worse than this show by a lot.
Yeah, but he doesn't go on there and promote them. Oh. I don't think he's ever been on there.
They literally talked about
it. The last show that you did was like 100 times more racist than the shit I say in the first 10 minutes.
With Brian O'Halloran. With Brian.
Dude, I know. That's what I'm saying. I agree.
Shit about his persona in the real world, which is cool.
What you should do is just reach out to him.
No, that is his persona. That I think that's him.
Wait, so going back, I'm not part of this video we can't post, right?
No.
No.
Okay, I was like, I'm pretty sure I walked the line.
No, as soon as you put the hood on, we turned it off.
No, okay, anyway.
Yeah, that fucking Ku Klux Klan outfit's expensive, man.
I'm going to wear it every chance I get.
They made me pay for that shit.
It's got to be fucking expensive. To keep that shit white, it's got to be expensive. Reminds me,
I got to write that down in my notes.
Tide. I'm sure they want to be that sponsor.
If you want to sponsor us, Tide. Keeping the Klan's whites clean. Anyway, going.
That's the name of the episode, I think.
Keeping the Klan's whites clean.
Yeah. Oh, that's fucking crazy. Wow.
Fucked up on a lot of levels. Just lingerie.
It's so good. Oh, man. So, what makes the Marvel Netflix shows super effective is their interconnectedness.
Right.
Just that's the same way the DC shows are. And I think they both are on the same level, but for different reasons. Like, if you want a serious take on superheroes and like their lives, then you watch Marvel. If you want comic booky, like comic book shows, you watch DC.
Fucking amazing.
Yeah. Well, also in DC, you have the higher echelon of power.
Yeah.
And then Marvel, you don't yet.
Yeah.
But you also have seven seasons of Arrow, six seasons of The Flash that you know. I feel like I know the characters.
There's just more.
Right.
Yeah. And part of that is because the length of the shows is shorter because they have commercial breaks, so they can film more episodes. And on top of it, they can put out seasons more quickly because of the production scheduling. So.
Yeah, I mean they're adding Batgirl back in this season. Oh, she might get her own season.
Yeah.
So I'm fucking excited for definitely. I know this was supposed to be
Batwoman.
Batwoman. I'm sorry, Batwoman. Yeah, not Batgirl. I'm sorry.
That's why they're like introducing her.
That's what I heard too.
So I'm fucking excited. Hey.
Definitely none of that because she's a lesbian.
That doesn't mean she can't get backdoored.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess that's true.
She's just not getting backdoored by a dude.
Yeah. Because she's a lesbian.
She does whatever she wants to do.
Stop pushing your agenda, Doyle.
It's not my agenda. It's their agenda. They made damn sure well we knew she's a lesbian.
They did. Because she just said, I'm a lesbian, and everybody went ape shit over it.
No, it's because every commercial is like, the lesbian Batwoman.
Well, yeah, but that's been a part of the vernacular of Batwoman since Batwoman was appearing in Detective Comics.
I think what he's saying is that though she's a lesbian, you don't need to tell me she's a lesbian. Let it just happen.
Yeah, but that's heterosexual Flash.
It's such an important part of her character, though.
See, I don't know that.
I don't think it is.
Yeah, it is. In the comic books, it's a huge part of her
character. At that point, and that was a different point of time in America today. Today, like, a lesbian main character just doesn't... It doesn't shock and awe me
but
at all.
It doesn't need to shock and awe you, but they need to tell that part of the story because it's a super important part of the story.
I agree.
Tell that part of the story, don't fucking advertise it. Just make it part of the show.
Well, of course they're going to advertise it because they're trying to hit a demographic of TV viewers that isn't watching these shows.
I will tell you, I don't know anything about Batwoman except that she's a lesbian. It's the only thing I know about
Batwoman.
And
she probably knew Batman at one time.
That or, one would hope.
Either that or she's stunting on his shit for reals.
I think she is.
Do you think she knows where the clitoris is?
She definitely
knows. She's probably
knows.
Pro. She's probably pro.
She is miles past our con game. Just saying.
Wow. I'm good.
She's got all those bat gadgets.
That's what the
bat tongue. Man.
Oh, God. Yeah, you're right. Don't post that.
Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly. I'm good with the diversity. I actually probably will sound Republican or conservative saying this. I'm good with the diversity. I just don't need to be beat over the head with
exactly.
it.
Like, I bought Black Lightning as soon as they announced it. I was excited about it, but it's just like every damn episode. It's like,
so I think like a genuine Black Lightning, I think, is an aberration. Like, I think
that sounded racist.
The way it's presented and stuff. Cause I watched like two episodes of it and you're right. Like it is ham fisted, like beyond belief.
They just didn't do a good job at it. Like,
every move you make of that microphone is getting picked up by that microphone.
So what loose. Is going on? Much like other things when I get done with them, it's so loose.
Your own asshole?
Yeah,
like
I don't do much.
So, but what I genuinely think is happening with Batwoman is that they realize that there's a demographic of viewers that they're not tapping into in that community, And they're trying to intentionally say, hey, we have a show for you too. And that's a mistake that advertisers make all the time. Like, let the show just stand on its own merit, and that viewership will just come to it. So
yeah, because I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that I don't think that black people like being reminded, like, you need to believe all these things. You know what I mean? Right. Like, just
hey, did you
like
you
said,
you were black.
Like, if I like a show,
did you forget you're lesbian? Let's remind you. Like, same thing.
I agree. I'm fine with diversity. None of that bothers me. Like it does some things that we'll talk about in the next episode. Yeah. But I just don't need to be beat over the head with it.
Right.
Certain shows just do a really bad job at this. That's the reason I'm not didn't get into Supergirl too.
Some shows do it great, some shows don't.
And I'm like, you're fucking Supergirl. You're already girl power. You don't need to do girl power. Yeah. Like it's like, you're stronger than Superman. You are the power.
The only thing that comes close to Spice Girls, like, you are it.
Yeah.
Girl power.
Wow.
Wow, that's putting Spice Girls on a really...
I got Tim Tripson once in the show, and it's to
Fuck
bring
you.
Up Spice Girls.
Fuck you, yo. Screw up your life.
I'm just saying, you put them right at the top of the list. That's pretty impressive.
All right. Cloak and Dagger.
Good.
Thumbs up for me, for sure. Runaways, it sounds like you're thumbs down.
Thumbs down, probably.
Like, Runaways. Considering that I maybe watched, like, 45 minutes of it, I'm going to say thumbs down. Like,
I'm thumbs middle. I watched it once. I think that'll probably be enough.
Yeah.
I think I'm still thumbs middle on Legion, too. Even though I couldn't get past it the first time, I haven't gone back to it, and I was interested.
Yeah.
So
my interest waned. I feel like when there's a good show, I'll just go through it, even if I'm like, oh fuck, I missed a week.
Isn't there another show that we're completely missing? Like with kids that are like running away with their parents, and they're developing powers, and like the mutants are being persecuted. I know there is, and I can't think of it.
I'm trying to think of what it's called. I know exactly what show you're talking about.
I actually watched a few episodes and it was fucking good too.
Is it an X-Men show too?
Yeah. No, it's the kids.
I forgot about it.
It's the kids whose parents are villains, right?
That's Runaways.
Runaways.
Oh, shit.
No, these ones is like this kid is getting bullied and his powers come forward in like a gym at a dance and the government knows about mutants and like oppressing them actively. So the kids have to go on the run.
Moment of silence.
Oh, we forgot about Agent Carter, by the way.
Well, yeah, that was short-lived.
I did not even watch that show.
The Gifted.
The Gifted. The Gifted is good. I've watched
any of that show.
I watched a few episodes and then kind of lost track of the show entirely, but it was pretty good.
Huh. I'll have to check it out. Sounds cool.
Because
that's the one that... Oh, yeah. It's the one that's like a straight-up like X-Men show. Yeah. Yeah.
The other... I mean, like maybe like last thing, so we got to get moving on. But how do you think any of the shows match up with the original hero show, Heroes?
Ooh,
I haven't
that's
watched
a good
Heroes.
Question, man.
You haven't watched
Heroes.
You should definitely
good.
At
I
the
heard
very
it was not
least.
Good.
No.
What?
You should definitely watch
Heroes
the first
one?
Season
great.
Of Heroes because it
Heroes
is great.
Back for a new show.
I didn't watch that, so I don't
yeah.
know about that.
I would say like at least the first two seasons Heroes. Of Heroes is really good TV. I would say that Heroes is like the prototype for these shows. Like I think it was the first TV show to really get the storytelling that comic books do right in a television format
since The Incredible Hulk.
You know, I genuinely think
I
it's better
the
than
Incredible
Hulk.
I can't
because
even Incredible
the Hulk. Hulk is
I
such a
The Incredible Hulk.
I do too, but it's so monster of the week and it's so
it is.
You know what's interesting
it's
is
that
it's,
shit was,
that's how comics
yeah.
were then too. Like the Hulk was a monster of the month comic and so the TV show was like yeah. that. Whereas Heroes took like that kind of like X-Men Chris Claremont style of month to month to month to month a yeah. different story is told, but an overarching story is told, and that's what Heroes did. Man, I haven't
Heroes.
Thought about that show in fucking forever.
I loved it a lot.
Yeah, I did too. That was back when I watched TV on TV, yeah. and it was Heroes is on.
You mean on cable, maybe?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
Like on regular,
I was like, I watch TV on my TV
I mean, like
all
on
the
regular
time. Yeah, I got you.
Television.
I got you.
Like, I would literally set aside, you know, Heroes is on at this time. Yeah. Don't fucking bother me. Like, if you called, I would, like, pick up the phone, hang it right up. Like, back
wow.
when.
Phones, not even let you leave a voicemail.
Back when phones yeah. were on the wall.
Come back with a wrestle.
Yeah. Heroes is on, bitch. Bye.
slam the phone like it makes a difference to the person on the other end.
Yeah, well, it did back then because this was like a phone because I'm old as fuck.
Yeah.
You know, probably had dial-up.
That's a good question. I think these shows, all of these shows, Marvel, DC, all of them, rest on the back of Heroes. Like Heroes, I think, was the proof of concept that you could tell these stories effectively in a way that was entertaining and
awesome.
Yeah.
And the weird thing about it is, too, is it's like they did that without any background
at all.
No, they made up their own shit.
Yeah, they just made up their whole universe and were like, I think we can do it.
Yeah.
I think we got it.
And it was genius.
Yeah, can you imagine how hard that sell was to like a board meeting? Like,
okay, we want to make a superhero show, but it's none of the superheroes you've ever heard of.
We're going to make up all our own shit.
I mean, you would have to go in and be like, it's like the X-Men cartoon, but none of the X-Men real people.
Wasn't the main girl pretty famous, though?
I don't think before this.
No?
I don't think anybody was famous.
She got famous after this.
Yeah. She was famous from it, probably.
Yeah. I don't think anyone was super famous in that.
Hero, the guy that plays Hero, was in Meg.
Yeah. I mean, Spock's in the show.
How far?
He wasn't Spock yet.
Oh, that's right. Quinto is in that show. Huh, I completely forgot about that.
Quinto.
Dude, and he's a fucking crazy, amazing villain,
I don't think there's been a better villain in a comic book show since him that I can think of.
Cottonmouth, for me, that's really the only villain that even comes close.
Zachary Quinto in the MCU, who's he playing? He
cuts people's heads open and
Zachary Quinto
brain.
In the MCU, who does he play? Oh, man.
The Riddler.
That is DC, you dumb
The Riddler.
I didn't hear you say Marvel. I just thought.
He literally said MCU. All right,
fucking fine.
We were just talking about Marvel and DC, so I just thought.
Man. In the Marvel universe, he would have to be somebody that
the Riddler. No,
he would have been, still the Riddler.
He would have been a really good Purple Man. Like that would have been a really good move for him. Like,
all right, well,
I don't know.
Let's at least jump to the movie.
All right,
do you want to take a break or do you want to jump right into it?
Yeah, let's take a quick break and then when we come back, we'll do our pop culture classic.
Yeah, bro,
the three,
and we'll end it at the same time. Oh, are we doing Lebowski Three Amigos on this one?
Amigos, yeah, that's what I have written down. Isn't that the order?
Nope, you're wrong, but it's cool.
No, okay, we'll do Three Amigos next month. So.
All right, Big Lebowski.
Big Lebowski.
Yeah, cause it was,
shut the fuck up, Donnie.
Hello, I'm Albie.
And I'm Heather.
And we do the Quantum Leap Podcast. It can be found at quantumleappodcast.com and also on iTunes.
We are starting at the beginning of Quantum Leap and going through all the episodes. This is my first time watching, and Albie has seen them during their original run.
In each podcast, we talk about the overall thoughts of each episode. We do an episode recap if you haven't seen them in a while, just to refresh your memory. And then we do a detailed plot discussion.
And we also have some great interviews.
Scott Bakula, I remember being very, very generous of spirit and very, very kind to his fellow actors. It was my first kiss ever. So I am getting to kiss Scott Bakula on screen.
And everybody involved with it was just terrific. And I'm always amazed that people come up to me and remember that episode and can quote things from it that I can't even quote.
So if you're a leaper, it'd be great if you came and joined us. And if you've never heard of Quantum Leap, it's maybe a good time to start watching it because you have a podcast to go along with it.
So please give our podcast a listen and hopefully you like us and stick around.
Go to quantumleappodcast.com to listen to new episodes.
Hi, this is Chris Mowry, writer of Godzilla Rulers of Earth and employee of IDW Publishing, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. On the line, we have returning guest Allison O'Toole. I have known Allison for quite some time. I think I mentioned that in our last interview. She's just a great person, huge fan of horror, but she is getting ready to, well, as we're talking, she's getting ready to launch. But when you listen to it, you will be able to go online to Kickstarter and look up Called Into Being, A Celebration of Frankenstein. She's editing it, and this is just a celebration of the 200th anniversary of the writing of Frankenstein, like this amazing novel that's been so influential in popular culture. Allison, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. Thanks so much for having me back, guys.
Oh, of course. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I mean, we've worked together, we've done stuff together, and like, it's you're one of those people that I'm like, oh yeah, if she wants to put something on the show, bring her on. Absolutely. So there you go.
Fantastic. I always love talking to you guys. You have really good questions.
I do my best. sometimes I have dumb questions, and when I have them and ask them, I always get these weird like, answers. And I feel like such a dope, but I do my best. Thank you. So you guys are doing this anthology called Into Being. It's going to be a celebration of Frankenstein. And why are we celebrating Frankenstein? It's because it's 200 years old. Tell me a little bit about your experience with Frankenstein.
So mine goes back to high school. I think like a lot of people, I read it in a class, and I liked it well enough the first time. I thought it was deep, like, you know, it wasn't what I was expecting, because we all have this pop cultural image of what Frankenstein is and what it's about. And of course the novel doesn't look like the Karloff inspired more pop version of the story. But when I read it again the following year in university, I guess we'll get into the deep dives now. The first time I read the 1831 text, but the 1818 text, the original version that I read in university, really, really connected with me, to the point where I remember our prof was trying to call out specific quotes from the book, and I was like yelling at him from the back of the lecture hall. I mean, it's on page 72. But I just, yeah, that second reading, I felt like it just connected with me on such a deeper level, like its themes and the characters and everything. And, you know, as an English major who studied 19th century lit a couple times, I had to read it more in university, which sort of forced me to continue to like read and analyze and find new layers in it. But I think it's a book I've read now five or six times, I think. And every time I read it, I find something new and something interesting to think about, whether it's related to like the context of the time when it was written or a connection it has to today or some like weird motif I didn't notice before. And I just find like it's so vital and interesting every time I read it. So yeah, it's been one of my absolute favorites for years. So I have like a stupidly large collection. I have like 9 copies of it or something. Cause I'm always like, oh, well, this one has new back matter. So I'm always like reading about and reading new versions, that kind of thing. Cause I just find it so interesting.
I love that there's nerds in the world like me that are just like, this is the exact same thing that I bought like 6 or 7 times. But this has like a different cover, or like this has an extra paragraph from an author I respect. So yeah, I'm going to spend another like $15 to $20 on this thing I already own.
Yeah, I get all mine at used bookstores. So they're all these like old students' editions. So they have like other people's notes written in them and stuff. Oh,
that's cool too.
Which is actually kind of fun, yeah.
It reminds me of the meme that was going around for a little while, where it's the last page of Frankenstein, and somebody has written, and then he turned around to me and said, "It's okay if you just call me Frankenstein."
So here's a fun story about that meme. The somebody who wrote in that book is Chip Zdarsky, the comics writer and artist. And he actually got in touch, and we actually are going to be putting that meme in the book.
Oh, that's awesome.
I thought at first I was sort of like, I don't like, it's sort of odd, like putting a meme in, but it's the tone of that is actually so lovely. Like the context of it. We thought it was like a really nice comment on the legacy. And because, you know, we know who owns it. We're not just like stealing it from the internet.
Right.
Yeah, Chip gave us permission. So that's actually going to be in the book.
Man, he stole the humor that 10 other people were supposed to be born with. Like,
I know.
It's unfair.
And to make it worse, he's like the nicest person.
That's
jerk.
I know. What a jerk. Being awesome and hilarious. How can't stand.
Yeah.
So So talking about the legacy, so we all have this like cultural image of Frankenstein as this lumbering beast with like, you know, a half a brain and, you know, just
an abnormal brain.
Yeah, the abnormal brain. And it either gets played for pure shock, like in the movies, or, you know, when you look at young Frankenstein, it gets played for humor, or he's, you know, if you look at a movie like Monster Squad, he's like the gentle giant kind of character. Ooh. But very rarely in popular culture does the actual character of Frankenstein's creature appear. Like, very rarely is it a true adaptation of the novel. Why do you think that is?
I think for one thing, I think just the Universal films loom so enormously in popular culture. I think it's hard, like, just the influence that the Universal films in general had on horror and like what horror film looks like. I think it's, you know, it can't really be overstated. So I think that is a lot to do with it, is a lot of the creators of later adaptations would have just grown up on the Karloff version. And frankly, like, film reaches a lot more people than literature does. And until the past few decades, Frankenstein wasn't a super respected text. Like, if you look at criticisms of the novel, it's a lot of like, oh, you know, it's got some really spooky imagery in it, but, you know, the writing's kind of clumsy and all this kind of stuff. Like, the scholarly interest in it has only been born up, I think, over, like, you know, within the past generation or so, which I think has a lot to do with it. Just the film is a lot more known and a lot more familiar. And I think it seems like it's easy, especially if you're contrasting with something like Dracula, that it tends to get brought up next to. Like, Dracula is always the one that's kind of eloquent and, you know, elevated and that kind of thing. So the monster, by contrast, is easy. Oh.
I said, is everything okay? Overwritten.
Oh, yes, exactly. And so by contrast, the monster is this, yeah, I think it's just easier to make him this sort of unstoppable brute, which is, you know, we could sort of not necessarily what Mary Shelley was interested in, but it's definitely like the imagery that seems to be returned to and seems to be what people think is more effective for whatever like metaphor they're trying to convey, I guess.
Right. When you're looking, like, as somebody that has a degree and has studied the book several different times, when you look at the text, like, what are some of the main themes that you pull out of the text that you don't necessarily see in popular culture?
Oh my God, so again, as I said, like, there are things I see every single time I read it, but I think recently, and there are certainly some versions of the adaptations that do this, like Penny Dreadful, for example, but, you know, one of Shelley's major arguments with the text was that it's society that breeds the monster, right? And I think because, like, this, I adore the Universal films, so this isn't really a knock against them, but I think it's fair that the introduction of this abnormal brain, you know, this thing that would make him violent immediately or malevolent in some way, kind of completely negates the idea that it was a product of rejection that made the turned the creature into the monster, so to speak, which is, I think, one of the most sort of key themes of the novel. And I also think it's in a reverse to your question, it's interesting that we've projected onto it all of these terrors of science, whereas I don't think like the actual, there's certainly the science is a part of the novel, but I don't think Shelley was like overtly or deliberately concerned about scientific progress, you know, like it was a much more philosophical concern than but there also wasn't this like sense of playing God, which again is something that always comes into the adaptations.
Right.
So I think that there are these sort of running threads, which is interesting, in both the text and the adaptations.
That's awesome. Like, it's interesting because when I read the book, I don't get that sense of dread of scientific progress, but almost like you said, almost every like other film or like comic adaptation of Frankenstein has that in it, like, be terrified that science will eventually progress to where, you know, we're touching, you know, we're Icarus trying to touch the sun kind of thing. And it never really came through when I read the book that way. Fascinating to me that people latch onto that. And I feel people latch onto that because of their own fears. Like the thing mm-hmm. that they see that scares them is less the creature and more, can science progress past where we feel morally, you know, right doing this science? That's a fascinating track to take, I guess.
Yeah, and I think, too, again, it's really influenced by these films because you have this enormous set piece in the Universal films with Kenneth Strickfaden's, like, the machines and everything. And, like, seeing that even today, how impressive those sequences are, both just with the machines themselves, but like the cinematography, and in Bride of Frankenstein, the music and everything. And I think that imagery, that iconography has become so intrinsically linked with what Frankenstein is in popular culture that like you have to think about science. You know what I mean?
Especially when you're looking at like Bernie Wrightson's visual adaptation of Frankenstein and then like his continuation of the story, Frankenstein Alive, so many of those like splash pages of like 2-page fold of just scientific equipment and the doctor like manipulating the creature on the table. Like it's such a huge and amazing like visual representation, such a big visual part of all the pop culture.
No, I agree. No, I totally agree. It's, yeah, as you say, like, I think that's, it's almost like he's been, Victor has been conflated with, like, a Dr. Hyde, or a Dr. Jekyll, rather. The two figures have sort of combined into this one mad scientist archetype, you know, that we haven't really been able to shake.
So, going from, like, the kind of sublime of, like, Bernie Wrightson into the silly, you know, there's Abbott and Costello movies with Frankenstein. There's, you know, movies like Monster Squad, which are semi-serious, but largely played for laughs. And of course, like the classic, you know, Mel Brooks, Young Frankenstein. Like, why do you think it's so easy to take such a serious idea and, you know, it can lend its voice to comedy like so willingly?
I think that people, like once something becomes archetypal, I think it can be easy enough to play it for laughs because you can play with people's expectations. So once it's a thing that everyone knows about and you have like, and Frankenstein, you know, the monster has such easy shorthand, you know, like you throw on flathead, neck bolts and that like arms outstretched. And it's like, okay, that's a Frankenstein monster. Like everyone knows that and understands that. And so I think that it's just become this like cultural icon. Like it's a myth more than a novel at this point. So I think it's really easy to reduce it down to sort of base recognizable parts and then manipulate it into being whatever you need it to be. I think Young Frankenstein comes from like a genuine love and really intrinsic understanding of Frankenstein and all the Universal films and what makes them work. I think that one specifically was like a lot of Mel Brooks and Gene Wilder really studying and thinking about those films to recreate them. In the case of Monster Squad or like Frankenberry cereal or something, I think it's just the imagery is so iconic that it's really easy to adapt it into whatever you need it to be. I probably sound dismissive, but I also don't think there's anything wrong with a lot of those images. I think they're fun and charming a lot of the time. I'm up for them.
Yeah, I like the box of Frankenberry, but the cereal's gross.
Yeah, did you see a couple years ago they had some DC artists redesign for Halloween all the cereal boxes?
I did. They were pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah, I like legitimately wanted a box of the Dave Johnson Frankenberry, but I didn't want the cereal. I just thought that his Frankenberry design rocked.
Right. So what are some of your like favorite, you know, takes on Frankenstein? Like what are some of the things that when you think of Frankenstein, obviously you think of the novel, like probably much in the same way I do, like where I'm like, oh man, it's everything is so different from the novel, but man, I really love the Universal movie. Like what are some of your favorite takes on Frankenstein?
Like my favorite adaptations?
Yeah.
yeah, I adore all of the Universal Monster movies. Like, I'm obsessed with them, and even beyond Frankenstein. So I love those ones a lot. I think Son of Frankenstein is kind of underrated. Like, it's boring, but all the tertiary characters rock. I loved Penny Dreadful. Adored it. There were problems with it, especially in its final season, but I think that the arc for the Frankenstein monster was, like, perfect and beautiful. I love Young Frankenstein, as we discussed. It's, again, like, there's no way they could have made that movie without really thoroughly understanding and adoring the source, so I really love that one. And I don't know, like, I'm, you know what movie sucks, but I love it? Van Helsing with Hugh Jackman. That had a fun Frankenstein monster in it. He was a very, like, eloquent, overwritten version of the monster, for sure. But I love that movie. It's so corny, but it's fun.
You know, we all have to have those movies. Like, everybody has a movie that literally everyone hates except for you. And that's okay. It's okay to love Van Helsing.
Yeah. We're horror fans. We're used to loving some real dismal shit, as to paraphrase Stephen King.
Right. My 7-year-old is currently really, really into Sharknado. And
heck yeah.
And that has been, like, the first two are pretty awesome, but she's like, let's watch Sharknado 5 again. I'm like, oh God, let's not.
That's amazing, though, that she's that young and is already into, like, millions of horror sequels. Gosh, she's going to be powerful when she grows up.
She didn't want to watch The Meg because she didn't think enough people were going to get eaten in it.
Amazing.
Yeah, I was pretty excited about that. Mission accomplished. So tell me a little bit about the project that you guys are doing, kind of how it came to be, and, like, just kind of the inspiration behind it.
So it came together because I tweeted about it, which is the great thing about crowdfunding. If you find the people to back it and people who want to do it, you just do it. But I'm co-editing it with Megan Purdy, who was one of the founders of Women Write About Comics, and right now works on a project called Mise en Scène, and also was also one of the co-editors on the latest volume of the Toronto Comics Anthology, which is a project I'd worked on previous volumes of. And yeah, it's so, as is evident from this conversation, I love Frankenstein.
Wait, what?
And because it, I know, shocking as it may seem, and so, yeah, so it's this year is the 200th anniversary of its publication, and I just thought it would be interesting to talk to other people and see what other people had to say about their own sort of personal relationships with it. You know, over the years, we've had other anthologies and that kind of thing about, you know, new interpretations of the text or putting the monster in new contexts and putting Victor in new contexts and that sort of thing. And, there's nothing wrong with that. There's like plenty of really incredible collections that do that kind of thing. But I wanted to do something a little bit different and get, like, really personal takes on it. So Called Into Being is going to be a collection of essays, comics, and illustrations where people are exploring their own personal connections with the text. So we have one contributor talks about writing their thesis on Frankenstein and how the, like, isolation of that act can make you feel like Victor locked away in his laboratory. One of our contributors talks about growing up looking at sort of feminine and female depictions of the monster and how that helped her sort of learn and celebrate and accept her identity as a trans woman. We have people talking about, like, depression and that kind of stuff as well. And it's just a lot of different ideas of what the text can mean and, like, the place it can hold in our different personal lives.
That's awesome. Like, that sounds really, really cool. It's one of those kind of stories that there's so much adaptation that's out there, so many different incarnations of it, and people latch onto it for so many different reasons. Like, in the punk community, there's so many people that have patches of Frankenstein or tattoos of Frankenstein because of that sense of, like, alienation. Like, I am different from everybody else. And, like, being able to express kind of that notion through just, like, a single image of a flat top and bolts on the neck, like you said, is very powerful. And there's so many different ways to look at Frankenstein and basically put your own spin on it. It's a really cool approach to a project.
Yeah, thanks. It's such an easy metaphor for anyone who's felt outcast or rejected for, you know, things beyond their control. And also, we have a few stories that talk about creativity and how it can be a metaphor for creativity, and how creativity can be damaging, or it can be good, or it can be freeing, or it can be all these other things. And so, especially for people who, you know, are creators and writers and artists, this kind of thing. But I think for creators, the metaphor of creativity in Frankenstein can be really potent and can be a really interesting thing for people to explore, whether it's in a positive or a negative light. So that's definitely another theme that comes up a few times in the book.
So what do you think the future holds for adaptations of Frankenstein? Like, where do you think are other places that people can take this story?
I think in today's climate, particularly in horror, we're starting to see an increase in sort of like identity-based and identity-related horror. And I think, as we said, like with the monster being a really easy metaphor for outcast people, particularly who, again, are outcast for reasons that are beyond their control. So say your race or your gender identity or your sexuality. I think that I'll be shocked if we don't see a few adaptations, or at least like spiritual successors to Frankenstein in that line. And even if it's not, you know, a direct adaptation, I think that that's just something we're going to see a lot of in horror generally. And I think that there's just like so much potent metaphor in Frankenstein for that kind of stuff that I'm sure we'll see some things that you can, if not directly correlate, at least sort of spiritually connect. That would be my assumption at least.
Nice. All right, so one last question, and this is probably the most important question.
Okay, I'm ready.
Do you call him Adam, the creature, or the monster?
Personally, I call him the monster or Frankenstein. I think contextually, people know what you're talking about most of the time. Like, I think that I'll call him the monster if I'm talking about both creator and creature, just to differentiate the two. And I mean, if it's like a scholarly essay I'm writing or something, I'll refer to him as the monster, just because I think that that's the most commonly held pop cultural name, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I think that, but most of the time you can just say Frankenstein and people will know what you mean. I think you can get pedantic about, you know, no, that was the creator, not the monster, but it's, like, people know what you mean, you know what I mean? And it's, I think that you can make the argument that the monster is Victor's son, and therefore would also be called Frankenstein. And I just don't think it's necessary to keep adding words to make it clearer what you're saying, if, like, from context, it's very obvious that you're talking about the monster, personally.
I just like being a jerk about it, so.
Oh, yeah, I get it. I get where it comes from, but I'm just, it's like, I don't know, man. I think it's, I'm an English major, but also did some linguistical stuff. And as an editor, too, it's just like, how can you be clearest in the fewest words possible? And if people can understand you and you don't need to add a bunch of extra words to your sentence, then you can just say Frankenstein, as far as I am concerned.
Nice. Awesome. Well, Allison, tell everybody how they can find like the stuff that you're working on besides the Frankenstein project, and then remind us again what it's called so we can all go look it up on Kickstarter.
Perfect. So I am Allison M. O'Toole on Twitter. That's A-L-L-I-S-O-N-M as in Margaret, O-T-O-O-L-E. And I will be tweeting from there about the project a bunch, but you can also go to frankenzine2018.tumblr.com for more information, and you can look up Called Into Being, A Celebration of Frankenstein on Kickstarter.
Awesome. Well, Allison, thanks again for being on the show. We always love having you on. And as always, if you have any new projects, please hit us up again, because it's just a blast to talk with you, because we're both like just horror dorks that like talking about horror stuff. So there you go.
I hope other people are as interested in listening to it as we are.
they have to be. They keep listening to it. So
it's true. Well, thank you. Thanks to you as well. It's always a pleasure. So I look forward to our next chat.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Allison.
Here's a few reasons why you should be listening to the Unwritable Rant podcast with host Juliet Miranda. She can tell a great story.
If you can't play dead,
play drunk. And it works, I swear.
She interviews celebrities that have great stories.
If we have a cousin that's kind of strange, we don't put him away or tuck him away. We set him on an old dryer out in the front yard with alcohol and let him wave at people.
Right. And then you tell your friends about it.
And she's tolerant and loves kids.
So these kids go running up after the ball, and I stand up and I yell, "Kids die in the street all the time."
So head on over to theunwritablerant.com and listen to the show.
Hey, this is Zach Davison, and I am listening to the excellent podcast, Thinking Outside the Long Box. Although I like to think inside the long box as well. Thank you very much.
Oh, it is Big Lebowski.
We're working on poop.
Yeah, because it was Mel's choice.
He got a new book and everything went to shit.
I was saving your life.
No, this is how the other book looks. So this is the actual episode notes.
Gotcha.
This is the pop culture classic.
Gotcha.
Then this is the next episode.
Whew.
Okay. Then this is that pop culture classic. Then these are the individual notes for the interviews. And then the next episode will go here. Oh, you fucking cunt.
Man, that was... Side note, we're recording.
Oh, are we really?
It's going to be a really thrilling section for the listeners.
I didn't know we were recording. You were making fun of my notebook, so I felt like I would explain it.
We were taking a 30-second break.
I know. I thought we were
We don't have a lot of time.
All right, we're back.
And you already whined about, I got to go maybe to the second episode, so I wanted it to go a little bit faster.
I just
got to
go to sleep before I go to work. I said I could stay till 1:30.
And we're back.
I hate you.
All right, so today's pop culture classic.
Shut the fuck up, Donnie.
Thank you. You're out of your element. Today's pop culture classic is
the worst movie ever.
Oh, we knew it.
We knew it. Called it.
1998.
Side note, I was just kidding. I already told him that.
1998, directed by Joel and Ethan Coen.
1998.
Directed by.
Years old,
shut the fuck up and let me get through this part.
Fuck up, Doyle. I was 11 years old.
Directed by Joel and Ethan Coen. Starring Jeff Bridges, John Goodman, Steve Buscemi, Julianne Moore, Tara Reid, which was awesome to see before she was crazy. John Turturro and Sam Elliott. Tim, you said you had the trivia on this one.
Isn't she back in the Sharknado movies? Like, she's not crazy anymore, is she?
No, I don't think
Keep
so.
Keep going while I let
okay,
this load up.
So, so I trusted you.
It trusted me and it fell through.
So let's talk a little bit about this. So
do you think she's going to bring that? She's going to spill that everywhere.
She's going to spill that.
So trivia, it actually did terrible in the box office.
Absolutely
when it came
terrible
out.
In the
I
box office.
I could definitely see that.
I didn't see this in the movie theater.
Yeah, that's not trivia. I knew
right?
that.
What else do you want to fucking know, man? This thing literally has fucking everything about the goddamn movie.
So
it sounded like
four
it sounded
things.
Like you volunteered
so
for this.
He did.
Really? I was fucking drunk and high.
Literally the only way to watch this movie, by the way.
This is true. So were you sober when you watched it?
Yeah, I'm always sober.
That was your first fucking mistake.
I liked
that was
the movie.
Like two or three things out of there.
Hey, fuck you. All right, John Turturro.
Turturro
hated his role as Jesus in the movie. Hated it. He said he was absolutely fucking embarrassed. They did so much shit to his character. They even fucking used a bag of birdseed to make his package look bigger in every scene. Like, he was like...
That is the weirdest fucking thing to accentuate your fucking
like,
dick.
Yeah. He was basically like, fuck this movie. He hated it. And then he went on to do Michael Bay films, so...
There you go.
So he regrets
mistakes
his life?
Yeah.
Yeah, really. The Coen brothers
probably made way more money, though.
He probably
the
did.
The Coen brothers don't necessarily care for the movie either.
Really?
Yeah. They're like, we made it. The script doesn't matter. That's a direct quote.
That's awesome.
They make some of the weirdest fucking movies.
They do.
Yeah. They originally wanted Marlon Brando for the Big Lebowski role.
Wow, that would have been a completely different movie.
All, right?
And then there was one other trivia piece about Steve Buscemi.
Oh, no. So apparently it's not just Steve Buscemi. Every time somebody's in a bowling shirt, it's not their name on the shirt.
Except for Jesus.
Except for Jesus. He's the only one.
How many bowling shirts you had said?
Oh, it's like 17 or 18 shirts throughout the movie.
That's awesome. So, initial thoughts. What do you guys think?
I like the movie. I haven't seen it in a long, long time. I don't think it holds up probably as well as I thought it might. But I was not hammered.
So you're wrong twice now. That's cool. Keep going.
Why? Because I like the movie?
No, because you said it doesn't hold up. No, keep going.
No, I said I don't think it holds up as well as I thought it might. I enjoyed the movie, though. I mean... I like we were talking about it over there while we were making fun of you two. I like John Goodman. I think he's fucking
he's
a brilliant actor.
is amazing. He's amazing in this movie.
Has he made a bad movie?
No. Not that I can think of. I'm sure he has. Like everybody.
We said it over there, like, has to be one of the most underrated actors in all of Hollywood. Because
he can pull off crazy different things.
Everything he's in is brilliant, like, that I can think of. And including, like a Cloverfield movie that I liked, but I know is not very popular.
Which is like, weird, because he's amazing a great in movie. It.
Fucking Flintstones.
Red State? He's in Red State, right?
Yeah, he's in Red State.
He's at the end. Oh, he's actually peppered throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, he's unbelievably good in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh my God, that is fucking funny. As the Cyclops. It's like, so he's hilarious. Funny.
Like,
fucking hits and the dude with that big-ass tree lamp.
Put up with Roseanne Barr forever.
He can be funny. He can be serious. He can be scary as fuck. Like, I mean, and he does a lot of that in this movie. Like, the scene where he pulls the gun on Smokey because Smokey's over the line, like, that is funny. Like, it's played for laughs, but when you really think about it, like, the intensity of, like, a shell-shocked, like, Nam vet, like, whipping a gun out on you at, like... They're calling the cops, man. Yeah.
Smokey, this isn't Nam, this is bowling. We have rules here.
Like, it's scary. Like, that would be a super scary situation.
It would be scary if anybody pulled the gun on you.
The best is they go out to their car. They don't run out to their car. They just saunter out to their car. They sit in the car. The cops pull up behind them while they're having a conversation. The cops run in while they're having the conversation. You see all this shit happening in the background, and they're just fucking sitting in the car. Talking to each other, and they continue to talk to each other through the entire time. Like, they at the very, very end, they drive away, but at no point are they in a hurry to get away from the police. Like,
well, they're all white,
so the attend
that's racist.
All white, so, all right.
So, the attention to detail in this movie is off the charts.
Yes.
So I paused it really early in the movie to point out in the scene where the two guys are trying to get the money from him and they're dunking his head in the toilet.
It's down there somewhere.
So when they pull him up, he's sitting next to the toilet, and behind him, the toilet roll is like in the state of there's one piece of toilet paper left on it. Like, and it's so... Only a dude that lives by himself is going to leave the toilet roll like that and just change it when he needs it later, as opposed to changing it when it's actually empty, Tim.
Can confirm.
Yeah.
Or they just don't have any more TP. You got to save it because you might have to wipe your butt with that little cardboard.
Do a little scrape and then a wipe.
Why
with the last
wouldn't
piece?
You grab a hand towel or something?
That's what socks are for, bud.
I'd rather use the cardboard.
I think what...
Talking to the guy who's shit in a bag.
I was going to say, I think what Doyle means is that's what trash bags are for.
Hey, you can shit in anything. When you're wiping, there's a difference of a story.
Do I look like I'm fucking married? The toilet seat's up, man.
So...
Not enough piss on that rim.
Yeah, it's so gross.
So, when Sam Elliott's character talks about the dude... being a man of his times, there is no more accurate statement. The mid to late 90s, when this movie was released, and kind of when the movie takes place, like that early to mid 90s, because it's the Iraq War and stuff like that, that dude existed like all over the place. I think everybody that was alive at that time knows somebody that was like that, just a total former hippie, burnout, dropped out of college, you know, somehow managed to pay his bills.
But I know people who are like that now.
I know, but not quite like this. Like, I mean, it's just, he really is a man of the times. And the movie, like, in a lot of the same ways that Clerks encapsulates, like, the teenage level of living through that time, I think The Big Lebowski captures being an adult that used to be a clerk at a video store at that time.
It's like that guy that just things just never quite went right for them.
Right. Like, he had so
or
much
they did.
He had so much promise, but then he got high and was just like, I'm just gonna do this forever.
It's weird because it's not society's you know, standard of what's good, but
he's happy.
But yeah, it is good in its own way.
He has sex every once in a while.
Yeah.
He hardly gets beat up at all.
Yeah.
He gets to watch his friend kill a Corvette.
Oh, that would make me so
sad.
It
sounds a lot like my life.
I'm not a big Corvette.
Less weed. Or more weed, I mean. Way more weed.
So, all right, another fun piece of trivia.
Oh, shit.
The TV edit of that scene, he doesn't say, do you see what happens when you fuck a stranger in the ass? He says, do you see what happens when you meet a stranger in the Alps?
What?
It's the dumbest fucking line I think I've ever seen for TV edit.
That doesn't even make sense.
I don't know.
See what happens when you meet a stranger in the Alps?
Never met a stranger what? In the Alps.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
They just start crowbarring the fuck out of each other.
It's violent in the Alps.
You kill my car, I'll kill your car, man. I'll kill your car.
Also, Jeffrey Lebowski's character is based on a real person named Jeff Dowd. So go look him up on your own free time because he's got a wiki.
Nice. He's
almost literally the same fucking person.
So
in real life.
I know we're trying to kind of truncate the episode so we can fit in a second one today. Thumbs up, thumbs middle, thumbs down.
It's a thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
But thumbs way the fuck up.
Yeah, thumb straight up.
It's just, like I said, it's just one movie that I think I thought was funnier when I first saw it than when I saw it again.
I think this movie gets funnier for me every single time I see it.
So this movie is like our Gods Must Be Crazy.
It's comfort food. Like, you know how the Gods Must Be Crazy is kind of like that comfort food movie for you? The Big Lebowski is definitely that movie.
I feel like
it's very one note, but the one note is perfect.
And executed
amazingly
over and over again.
I think I like more hammy kind of comedy. I think is why what because those kinds of movies I love because I feel like they just make me laugh. I love the Three Stooges because
they fall down.
There's no
and they
acting,
get hurt, and it's
but
hilarious.
They're always hitting each other and shit. Yeah. It's just funny to me, and that, I think that's what I like in comedy movies as I move forward. But
you know what? I love a lot.
But
of
I like
that.
The movie.
I
give
a
thumbs
lot of
up.
That in comedy films too.
It's just very dry.
It's just that this humor. This is.
It's definitely not laugh out loud funny, but it is.
It makes me
laugh out loud.
It makes me laugh out loud through the whole thing.
The scene where the two of them are laughing on the phone and Lebowski's just standing there like,
"What the fuck?"
Like, that's probably one of my favorite scenes in the whole fucking movie because it's so awkward.
My favorite scene. So I did have a moment where we're watching it, and the dude and Walter. It's the very first scene where you see the dude and Walter and Donnie. Okay, I was like, "Oh shit." Like, the dude is definitely Tim, and I'm definitely Walter, and Juan is definitely Donnie. where Juan comes in and says things that probably totally make sense and are really pertinent to the conversation. I just scream at him to shut up, and Tim is like, calm down, guys. Like,
'cause we just roast each other constantly.
And then I was like, so which one is... I was like, I'm pretty sure Doyle is the Jesus. Like,
no, Doyle's definitely Lupin's character.
The guy that's giggling on the phone?
Yes. Because that guy is obviously onto some shit that nobody's really up on. And that's definitely Doyle. So when Doyle's like laughing or snickering to like one of you fucks about some shit that like the average person just does not know. And we're all like, yeah, go ahead.
meat fumes.
Oh no.
We were kind of making fun of you for your laugh, so
I don't care. I don't care. It's
I think everyone's just tired.
It's fucking pathetic how self-conscious I am about stuff like that.
I just woke up. Don't take it to heart.
Oh man. Anyway,
take it to heart.
Big Lebowski, one of my
thumbs
favorite
up.
Movies. Thumbs up across the board.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it for sure.
Nice.
I recommend it to a certain group of people.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that's true.
Even if you don't like the movie, you're still going to enjoy parts of it.
The characters are still like perfectly that. Like I said, it is a one-note movie, but those characters are acted and portrayed perfectly, like for what they are.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
And the acting, I think, is. I mean, like Steve Buscemi is amazing.
I was gonna say again because we had this conversation a little bit about Three Amigos. You're talking about actors in this movie that are fucking giants. They're big in the acting business. So
and they may not have been super super big when the movie came out, but
this is
one of the stepping stones for them to become like massive stars.
Because like I think I said this last night, I was like, Steve Buscemi's like such a little bitch in this movie, but then like I'm also watching Boardwalk Empire, and he's fucking amazing.
He's another actor who you're like you don't hear too much about him, but he's fucking amazing. Everything you see stuff. Him in.
Yeah. And I think that's
against all odds actor. Because he's like, why is this guy in Hollywood? Because he's ugly as fuck.
That's his. But he knows that. That's his thing.
No,
like,
I know. He's one of my favorite actors.
He's like, I got millions of dollars, but I'm never going to fix my face. Because that's me. That's who I am. It's what I embody.
# Forrest Whitaker eye.
I think it's a testament to
his whole face is like a Forrest Whitaker
their
eye.
Their work ethic. Right. Like, that's the reality of it.
I didn't hear it, so I don't know.
I miss it, too.
I'll hear it in post.
His whole face is Gabe's dog, Gizmo.
Oh, wow. Oh,
man.
Steve Gizmo.
Steve Gizmo.
Wow. All right.
Anyway, going back to what I was saying, I think it's just a testament to their dedication to their craft. Like, they clearly work hard at what they do, and as a consequence, they put out amazing, amazing films and television and whatnot. So, all right.
Take us out. Let's take a break. We're going to skip
Old Man this episode because we're trying to cram in a couple episodes today.
The Dude Abides.
You know what? My Old Man pick is this.
The Big Lebowski.
Dude, you got to swear so much.
What are you talking about, man?
Love that scene. Still my favorite scene. Anyway, if you enjoyed what you listened to,
do you want? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, what were you going to say?
I'm going to find the Big Lebowski comments.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead though.
If you enjoyed what you're listening to, be sure to check us out on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. Facebook at facebook.com/thinkingoutside. Oh, God damn it. facebook.com/thinkingoutsidethelongbox. Twitter or Instagram at @outsidelongbox. You can find us on email.
Definitely can't find us inside a long box.
God, I hate you guys so much. You can find us on email at outsidethelongbox@gmail.com.
Wait, we're in an inbox that's outside of the long box.
Oh, God damn it. I got to get my list because I completely lost my train of thought.
If you Google it, you can
really
find
sound
it.
Do like that when I laugh? Like, do I really sound like that?
No, there was just a part during that interview where, like, literally after everything you said, you chuckled at yourself. That's what I looked at when I was like, I'm so fucking funny.
I don't think I'm funny.
It's like that's awesome.
Oh, man.
She could have said, I died. Oh, that's awesome.
But I've been not saying that because you guys make fun of me all the time for it.
It wasn't wrong. It's just, it wasn't right, you know?
Okay, Johnny Jones, I'm going to skip over you really quick. Johnny Jones said both, because he's talking about both movies.
I totally did not. I thought I was going to be like, it's Jessica Jones, dumbass. You're in comments, so that's different.
The Big Lebowski I loved because the dude was and still kind of is my spirit animal, and the writing was just superb.
Even though nobody who made the movie seems to give a shit about it.
James Zeef said he never saw it, and it's not worth watching.
Fuck you, James.
Fuck you, James.
Zach Clemens says, love the Big Lebowski. We all could learn something from the dude. And Jason Wells says, the dude abides.
Oh, so. Right on. Right on, man.
Well, take us out. So.
Yeah, I'm going to try. I'm going to try again. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TOTLB. /thinkingoutsidethelongbox. That's written down wrong. YouTube, you can find us at tinyurl.com/TOTLBtube. You can email us at outsidethelongbox@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram or Twitter at @outsidelongbox, on the web at www.totlb.com. In case you don't want to like actually look any of those things up, you can just click on links from that particular webpage. Of course, we would love to hear your comments. You can give us a call at 970-573-6148. Leave a message on the Michael Kirk Memorial Hotline. May his midget porn loving ass ever rest in peace.
That's really weird. You weren't going to say it for a minute there.
What's that?
Because usually you do, please call the Michael Kirk Memorial Hotline, then you give the number.
Oh, yeah.
I was worried. I was like, damn, did we just off Michael Kirk completely?
No. The Michael Kirk Memorial Hotline is a very important part of the show.
Even though he has it all written down, he never says it the same way.
I try not to. I try to mix it up.
That's all right. I'm not making fun of you.
Jazz hands.
I promise I'm not making fun of you.
Jazz cigarettes to have jazz hands.
Awesome.
Fuck you. If you want to support the show, there's a couple different ways that you can do that. You can go to amazon.totlb.com, buy your shit off of Amazon the way
start
you normally do.
Start giving us Patreon money, you bitches.
Let me fucking at least get to Patreon. Before
I thought you were honestly done and just fucking around.
No, I wasn't anywhere near there yet.
Even when Doyle's not here, still manages to interrupt him while he's trying to close.
I thought you guys were done and just fucking around.
You can go to totlb.com/shop and pick up some of our awesome glassware from Etch and Sketch. Yes. Thank you, Chelsea, for...
I'm adding the salt shakers here pretty soon because I have two of those left. Nice. And there's a surprise that hopefully I'll be able to add later.
Ooh, a surprise.
Yeah, everybody here in this room will get one.
Oh.
As well as outside of the... No, I'm not associating you with dildos, Chelsea. All right, that's Doyle Daniels. I mean, you can Google him if you want.
Unless you want to be associated.
I don't
with
think
dildos.
That Etch and Sketch sells dildos.
I don't think so either.
I didn't know we were still talking about a different person.
Aggravated artist.
I just thought you had us mold our dicks a while back for this special occasion.
And of course, the last, final, and most important way that you can support the show, you can go to patreon.com/totlb, which. It was really nice when Brian O'Halloran like kicked me to the Patreon page and then I fucking flubbed it. Yeah, that was amazing. So I'm fucking drunk. Anyway. You guys suck. Patreon.com/TOTLB. And of course, we want to thank all of our Patreon donors: Chad, Ryan, Derek, Doyle, fuck you, Devin, Taylor, Jason, Steve, Christine, Molly, and Michael. You guys are awesome. You help keep the show going.
If there has been problems with Patreon, call them.
Yeah.
They switched people who take the payments and all that shit, and it's been fucking crazy for Patreon supporters. So
use PayPal.
We unfortunately can't do it. What do you mean use PayPal?
There's been no problems for people who use PayPal.
No, through Patreon?
Somebody that uses PayPal contacted us really? And said yeah. that she had a problem.
Christine.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought the PayPal was like the good way to go.
I was going
to
not say her name.
They've,
but
why?
I don't know. It just felt weird.
It's not. I'm not like I'm giving her information.
Christine blah, 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 whose PayPal number is.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, good
no,
point.
She,
good point.
They've been taking my money like clockwork.
They've been telling people to switch credit cards and shit. I mean, it's a whole thing, but it's not. I unfortunately cannot help you. That's nothing, unfortunately, that I can do. So contact them. Hopefully, you'll still support us, even though shit's been kind of crazy for a couple of months.
And of course, to support us, go to patreon.com.
Please.
TOTLB.
And thank you very, very much. Well, I don't think we say thank you enough. So,
but thank
to those
you,
people,
for sure.
Yes.
You guys are awesome. We love you very much.
Except for Doyle.
Yeah, except for Doyle, who's a dick.
I pay $25 a month for that privilege. It's my own special tier.
In a way, Doyle just fucking owned you, man.
I know, it's amazing. With that said, I'm Gabe.
I'm Tim.
I'm Doyle.
I'm Juan.
And this has been episode 96 of Thinking Outside the Long Box, I think.
Yes.
Shut the fuck up, Donnie. Yes.
You're out of your element.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast, Baron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Baron Space production.